Hey kids, it's Tom Baker here again. Do you like Hack the Voice Radio? Me too, especially that episode where they hacked the chameleon circuit on the Type 40 TARDIS. Oh, wait. That doesn't happen for another 12 years. Stay tuned, though. That's a spanker of an episode. You're listening to Hack the Voice Radio? I like it when they say fuck. Tom Baker demands that you send your feedback to radio@hackervoice.co.uk.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Hacker Voice Radio on the 29th of March, 2006. Back in the studio, we have Dark Nature, myself, Bilal, and Planet Lave.
Hello.
Hello.
Got some things lined up for you. Well, today that I wanted to kind of communicate about. Basically, I was speaking to a few people in IRC about how work groups and and domains work and stuff like that and different tools and that. So I want to speak a little bit about that. Planet Lave wants to talk about how he made those recordings, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
Yes, he does. He does, doesn't he?
He does.
And Dark Nature will be speaking about how cool his t-shirt is. I'm just kidding.
It's the very sexy t-shirt.
Yeah. Right. You know what the biggest, weirdest conundrum is right now? Is I lit a cigarette, but I don't know how I did it. Because none of the lighting devices, aka lighters around me, are working. So I've got no idea how I fucking lit this one cigarette, and obviously smoked it, put it out, and then... It's weird.
You definitely lit it. I
definitely lit it, but I don't know what I lit it off. Oh, I know, I found out, don't worry.
Is it a lighter that works?
Yeah, it's a lighter that works, yeah.
Ah,
yeah.
Simplest answer.
It was hidden from my view, because I must have put it down while I was doing something, so yeah. Yeah, mystery over. Please, you don't... Yeah, let's not have emails in for that, it's alright.
Be a new competition, how did I light my fag? Win a t-shirt.
So, yeah, how did you get to record these things? Because I remember you spoke about how BT introduced this new text-to-voice stuff. So if you want to just elaborate and describe what you just told us off air on air now.
Sure. I was just speaking to you guys off air, as you say. It's a bit of a cack-handed system that I got to work. If you go down Maplin's, who will supply you with all kinds of weird little electronics, they're a little bit pikey sometimes, but they do have some good stuff. You can get a little gadget, which it plugs in between the handset of your phone, your normal landline phone, and the actual base station. So you plug your handset into this device, and then this device into the base station. And in between those two points, as a little output jack, a standard headphone, 3.5mm, what do you call it? So, what you can do with the text-to-voice system is you send an SMS message to a landline, and then it reads it out for you. Now, it used to be in the normal boring voice, but 3 months ago, and it ends on Friday, they put in Tom Baker's voice, which we've been having a lot of fun with. Mm-hmm. We should really take advantage of it before it ends.
Yeah.
So, you've got a standard 3.5mm jack. That will fit into your sound card. Only problem is, when I put it into my sound card, it got all kinds of weird electronic feedback, and it sounded like an absolute nightmare.
Mm.
It was just interference and... And that doesn't sound very good.
I love the way you did that.
Sorry, just like that.
Well.
Could you just record it going mer for us?
Yeah, why not? what I did is I got the 3.5mm jack and I put it into the microphone in on a old mini disc recorder, which I didn't even think worked anymore. Thank God it did. Hit record on that, send the SMS message to your landline and wait. Then pick up the phone when it rings and press record on the mini disc thing, and it will record everything that's going down the line. So then you've got an audio of the entire conversation, which should just be the automatic BT woman saying, "You have a text message from 07777742.
Haha, now I know your phone number.
Oh no! then it's basically stopped that, plugging the headphone out or the line out into your computer, and use SoundForge or Audacity, anything that will record off your headphone socket on your sound card, and hit record on the computer, hit play on the mini disc recorder or whatever device you're using, and that's pretty much it.
Right.
Might have to piss about with the noise levels a bit. I did. It picked up quite a lot of interference. Tweak it down a little bit is what we did here, and it kills the noise but not the voice.
Right.
So it worked out all right, I think.
I like that. Kills the noise but not the voice.
Oh, yeah.
Wicked.
That's super cool.
Yeah, thanks for giving us this explanation.
Hey, anytime.
If nothing else, it, you know, uses up some time, so...
Well, if nothing else, I think it's the first piece of content I've ever actually put onto the show.
In over 113 episodes, this is the...
I've been waiting.
It's, you know, it's all been accumulating over this time, you know.
You know, I'm a late bloomer, what can I say?
It was all building up to this moment.
Yeah.
And that was it. I'm going back to bed now.
Yeah.
So what is that number anyway, Bennett?
All you have to do is send an SMS text message to your own home
line. So it'd be like 0208 or 0119, something like that. Basically, you're sending an SMS to...
Sorry, yeah, I missed that bit.
Yeah, you're basically sending an SMS from a mobile phone to a landline, and you need a special device to pick it up.
Cool.
Costs about £10.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah, it's
What's
dirty.
It called?
I'm not actually sure because I ripped the packaging off and threw it away. But I'll find out and I'll see if I can post a link on the forums with what it is.
Yeah.
It's dirt cheap, it really is.
They sell some pretty cool stuff at Maplin, don't they?
Yes. Oh, well, I think Maplin's as a organisation are complete cunts, but they do stock some half-decent hardware anyway.
Oh, yeah.
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 Okay, so, let's see what we've got in news for today. Let's see. 29th.
I have a story from the Register.
Yeah.
I don't know if people have come across this one. It was, I think, last Friday. Mm-hmm. The city manager of a city in Oklahoma... His name's Jerry Taylor. Oh, Total City, Jerry Taylor. Started a bit of a flame war with CentOS, you know, the Linux guys.
For sales, Linux. Yeah.
Yeah, for sale Linux guys. Yeah. Yeah. It seems the servers that run the city's website, there was a problem, and it basically defaulted to the, you know, their distro's Apache welcome configuration page.
Yes.
This guy gets all feared about it. Starts writing to CentOS, saying, you know, "You've hacked my boxes, and I'm calling in the feds." And CentOS write back and say, "You know, we're just the operating system people. We didn't hack your boxes. We didn't do anything. It's just whoever installed the operating system." And he's like, "No, this is government property. You've hacked my boxes. We're going to come and kill you."
You've hacksawed my megahertz.
Oh, I tell you, it makes quite a story. I'll post the URL because there's a big write-up, and it's got a transcript of all the emails, and of course, because, you know, a lot of people read the Register.
Yeah.
This caused a lot of Linux likers to start emailing this this city manager guy, this Jerry Taylor, and through the the total homepage, you know through his blog page or whatever it is, and now he wants the internet switched off, basically, because he's been harassed over the internet.
It's about bloody time.
It's getting quite. It's really is funny, but there's a picture of this guy as well, and he looks like Gollum. So willing just for that. Anyway, there's the URL just in the IRC there.
Cool,
sweet.
It's quite the thing. It made me laugh.
Fantastic.
But yeah, it's he's giving it loads. He's like, I didn't ask for this software on my box saws, and you've hacked off me. Now I'm going to send in the feds and the army and the A-team. Talk about default robot BIOS.
Yeah. Sounds like a noob.
A noob.
And some more excellent work from LucasAid. Been meaning to send this guy a T-shirt to thank him for his work, but he hasn't got back to me with a postal address or anything like that. So LucasAid, if you do want a T-shirt, send me an address where I can post this to. It doesn't have to be your home address if you are as paranoid as the rest of us. But yeah, one's got your fucking name on it, you know. Not in Biro or anything, but, you know. Just a fucking... Yeah, I just scribbled it on, yeah. And signed it and rubbed it on my balls, yeah. It increases the value of the product.
Balls.
That's what I do to all the T-shirts.
Oh. Oh.
I'm taking mine off.
I'm kidding.
That's going right in the washing machine.
I'm joking. No need to panic. Okay, so what do we have here? Right, I was meaning to basically speak about how Windows networking works, because not really naming any names, but a few people in IRC wanted to know. I was commented to be very wise, and somebody wished they were me, which is quite a nice compliment. I don't think I'm that wise, but if you want to be me, I'll fucking trade places any day, mate. Anyway, how this thing works... You've got two structures. Without getting too technical straight away, basically there's two different ways of networking Windows machines. You've got a workgroup architecture, and you've got a domain architecture. So let's talk about the most basic, most simplest way to and why you would network. Why do people have to network things? There's a few reasons why. Because it's very cheap and very effective to share certain resources between a number of computers. So, if you had a Soho environment, and I'm not talking about prostitutes and back alleys, I'm talking about small office and home communities. You would have about maybe 5 to 10, maybe more, 20 computers. Anything above that, you're looking at a domain. Anything below that, you probably get off okay with a workgroup. So you'd basically have all these computers connected up, hopefully to some sort of network routing device that can be a very simple hub, or a switch, or even possibly a router, and that enables each computer, assuming that you have administrated the IP addresses correctly, to talk to one and another. and also to any networkable devices that may exist on that network, on the same subnet, which could be a print server, a print device, or a file server, or anything like that. Maybe even a fax. Anything like that, that can talk on the same network via the same Ethernet, TCP/IP, TCP over IP protocol. So that's basically the reason why people would basically need a network. Right. The second step is to really think about your essential needs. So you need to share folders and files. And you also need to be able to print. Now, in a work group environment, each of the assigned network permissions, you would need to be placed on each separate machine. So, let's say if Margaret has a computer and Brian has a computer. For Brian to access Margaret's computer, he would have to have an account on Margaret's computer to be able to do this. Same goes for Margaret to access Brian's computer. Each account is held individually on each of the work group computers. You can have more than one work group within a network. So by default, every single XP 2000 and XP service pack, whatever machine, assigns itself to a work group. Guess what it's called? Work group. So everything would jump on a network group on the same IP address and effectively be able to browse what is called the Windows browser directory. And each machine would then, by its own initiative, broadcast a browser. Packets. So this is very basic, low-down level TCP/IP stack. That's what we're talking about. It's just on the application level. It's actually managed by a service called NET, which is quite an interesting little application that runs on each anything above NT4. It's actually called NET. So if you go to command prompt and type in NET view, that will actually go out and search for a browser master. Now, browser master is identified by the hex code 02, I believe. Might be wrong on that one, but off the top of my head, I think it's 02. So what will happen is it'll list every single machine it sees by its NET BIOS address in that browser master. This is effectively the same thing you do when you click on My Network Places. As soon as you click on that, it goes out, searches for this browser master, drops them down a list, enables you to basically effectively view all the shared devices that machine is actually giving access to you. And that's basically work groups. Now, it has its plus and it has its minuses. The minuses are it's a fucking bitch to administrate because you have to go around to each one of these things and set certain permissions, and it's all very distributed. It's distributed administration. Mark's actually pointing out that some actually use the work group of MS Home. That's correct. I think that would be Win2K... Win2K workstation that uses MS Home. So that is correct in saying that. Yes, where was I? So some of these things are very difficult to administrate. So you'd have to actually set each permission on each computer for each person to access. And you'd be getting in trouble trying to do this with over 20 computers. You don't want to hit that limit. The next step is, if you have 20 plus to about 50, 60 even computers, and I'm talking about workstations here, you are looking at a domain infrastructure. In a domain infrastructure in Windows 2000 and 2003, it's governed by a domain controller. It can have one domain controller or a backup domain controller, or in Windows 2003, these things aren't classified. Everything is in fact a primary domain controller. However, certain things have certain different workings. As you know, Windows is really fucked up, and you know, they have different ways of working these things. I won't go into the technical things because I could be here talking for fucking hours about this. But you know, I'm sure people are getting bored already. So what happens is, in a domain, you have to set a domain controller to hold a domain, hopefully with DNS run on the same box or a different box. It would have to have some way of actually administrating all these accounts on the domain controller. You possibly might want to run Active Directory on it, which will then hold all the accounts of each person that needs to access anything on that network on that actual domain controller. So that if, like, Margaret wanted to access Brian's stuff, all she would have to do is log in as her onto her machine, and everything would be handled on the domain controller's permissions attributes in Active Directory. So it's a much more centralized management structure and makes everything so much more efficient and much simpler at actually administrating. However, of course, it has its own downsides, because what happens if that DC goes down? Your whole fucking shit, you know, everything's crapped out because you can't access this, you can't print from here and there. That's why you need to buy at least two of these machines. Quite expensive. You're looking at about $2,500 for one, you know, depending on what kind of stuff you're looking for. So you have to invest some money and some pre-thought to this. And another thing is, Windows 2000 Server is vulnerable to different kinds of attacks. Because you have a centralized SAM file, have a centralized LAN access management file on that server, it would be very simple for that actually to be exploited, and then for an attacker to be able to gain every single username and password from that domain controller. One way of doing this would be through an enumeration attack. There's a program called Enum that can do this for you with a simple brute force attack with a dictionary file. It would take you maybe half an hour, 20 minutes, or even longer to do this, but it has been done. And in a lab test scenario, I've been doing this kind of stuff, and I do know my stuff when it comes to Windows security. You basically have that flaw in there. So if you, let's say you're talking about Windows 2003 environment, it's much more secure only if it's running as a Windows 2003 environment. If you run it in a mixed mode environment, which you can do for Windows 2003 or Windows 2000 server to talk to Windows NT stuff, They can both function in mixed mode. Now, if you run anything in mixed mode, it becomes instantly very, very unsecure, because it's actually talking to something that's a version below it. And you can still attack a Windows 2006 machine as well as a Windows 2000 machine with the same attack you could have done on the previous version. So in that sense, You really should invest in the upgraded version. This is why Windows is very insecure when it comes to these kind of things, because of the way that they've originally foreplanned the entire administration structure and everything like that. Now there's just so much stuff I can really go into huge details about how Active Directory works, how global catalog masters work, how DNS queries work, how all this kind of stuff, how WINS work. And WINS is also another fucked up thing. And I want to stop talking about it right now. And if anyone wants to know any more about it, please make that very clear to me, and I can do this at a later date. But I think I've said what I need to say right now, and I'll stop talking now and let somebody else come in with whatever they want to say. if they're still awake.
What? No, it's cool stuff, man.
Yeah?
A lot of the theory of that I didn't actually know, especially with work groups.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff you're saying there about net bias and things like that, I've never looked into, because setting up a work group is so bloody easy. you know, you set up a couple of machines and it starts working. You think, oh, great, I'm the man. And you walk away and leave it alone.
Well, I have to say that that actual application, that net application, is very critical. And a lot of people overlook it. And it's very essential for Windows. So I advise anyone who's interested to take a look at how it works, what kind of functions it does, how the ISO structure of Windows works, to get a better understanding, a better grasp. And if they want, I can at a later date or tomorrow, whenever, talk further into detail about how these different components fit together into making a Windows. A Windows networking structure.
Cool.
I hope that wasn't too boring. I don't know.
It was a very, very informative introduction to Windows networking. I run a small Windows network in my house, and we use a work group in the office as well, because we've not got enough hosts to run a domain yet, you know. But using the old Windows Net BIOS is simple enough to get things up and running, doing the job. But as you say, it's a real pain in the ass when you are using a work group, because everybody wants to be sharing everything else with them. And it's the thing that it's so easy, does basically encourage people to leave the shit wide open.
Well, I mean, I've been doing this stuff for quite a while, and, you know, you can throw any question at me and I'll be able to give you a very, very descriptive and long, elongated answer. But I have to say that any organization... Now, I've worked with very small organizations of 10 to 15 people plus, to you know, like charities and stuff like that, and they usually run on a work group environment. But what they don't realize is how horribly insecure that environment is. But they can't do anything about it. Why? Because it's just so expensive to do this. And also another thing you have to look at is once you go into that domain step, not only are you paying for the hardware, you're also paying for the license for the software, and on top of that, you're paying for the per seat or per user license. Windows, Microsoft bumfucks you two ways. If you see what I mean, you know, they take you up, you know, they take you up the arse as well as oral penetration there as well. So they've got all the orifice covered for all these kind of people, and it's immensely complicated, and this kind of stuff you can learn from a book, but to get very good at it, you need about 10 books, and you know I've been supervising people that know a small amount, a good grasp, but they need to learn huge amounts in like 2 to 3 days, because you're running on a critical time scale, and you're also, once you know, over £2,000 is involved, you know, you start to get a bit edgy, and you need to get shit done, basically. So that's why it's very expensive, and you've got to look at it very seriously, because not only are you looking at the whole administration side of things, you're looking at what happens if this stuff falls over. You know, how critical is this? How essential is this data that we are using? You know, do we need to back this stuff up? If so, how do we go about backing this stuff up? You know, is a simple NT backup suitable, or do we need to invest in a backup device, some tapes, maybe? You know, maybe a remote backup to a remote a data center, and all this kind of stuff. And once you start rolling these things in, you're looking at, you know, thousands and hundreds of thousands of pounds to get this stuff working.
That's very true.
Yeah.
And people don't realise just how easy it is to exploit a Windows workgroup environment.
Yeah.
Even with no credentials whatsoever.
That's correct.
I've been in places. I can hear myself. Quite. I've been in places with work, and I've been waiting in the reception area with my laptop.
Yeah.
And you know, while no one's looking, I'm just sort of plugging my laptop into an unsupervised access port, Ethernet access port, and you can get an unauthenticated connection to a host, the IPC share, and you can start enumerating the network there and then. If they don't disable anonymous connections over what's it, SMB, from then once you've got an unauthenticated attack or access vector on one of the hosts, it's game over essentially. You can start collecting packets. Use a package like Kane and Abel. Kane is the shit for doing this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, another thing I'd like to add, seeing as we're talking about the whole Windows stuff, is and by the way, all this stuff that I'm actually telling people, people actually pay over £1,000 to learn. So, anyway, to stop stroking my ego there. Another solution to this whole kerfuffle is if you have an organization of less than, let's say, 30 people, and you still want to reduce end client cost, but remain in a secure workgroup environment, people tend to overlook another solution, and that is thin clients. You can and set up various amount of thin clients at a very reduced cost, and then have them point to a Citrix machine or a fat client endpoint, which will then handle securely through even a VPN connection. Could be fucking thousands of miles away around the globe. However, it could just be in the next room, but securely handle all this kind of stuff for you. And this is one of the things that goes amiss, because what happens is people or organizations get very greedy, and they purchase loads of amount of computers that effectively could be a server. You know, all a computer is it could be a server as well. You could run a server from a 133 megahertz processor, whatever. You could do it, but they overlook the fact that you could just run a thin client that then hookups either to Citrix or some sort of backend to handle all this processing, and it's just so much more cost effective and much easier to administrate, and far more effective at handling a Soho environment.
There's always Samba. You can do a half decent job of setting up a domain controller with Samba.
That's right.
And that's good and free. Mm. All you need is a nice Linux distro.
That's right.
You can certainly do a good enough job. Yeah. Certainly if you're not running like a big company, let's say.
But that's moving away from Windows, see?
Well, yeah.
Because the problem right now is that we're talking about anything, only Windows stuff that you can deal with.
Purely Windows stuff.
And exactly, and you see how tempted we are to talk about Linux. I had to try very hard to stop myself from mentioning the benefits of doing something with a Linux machine. But you confirmed a very valid point there.
Yeah. Well, I set up a Samba successful Linux box and installed Samba at work, but that was after much persuading of my boss and the people that I work with that Linux isn't a hacker tool.
Yeah.
Because I work with the normals, let's say.
Yeah.
I took in my own laptop to demonstrate that Linux is good and free, and offered to let them have a copy of themselves that they could play with, and But once they saw these command lines and things that you have to configure with
they got
files,
very scared.
Yeah, yeah. They instantly thought this is not the way forward. You know, they said, well, where's all the nice GUI-ness? And I showed them that you can have all the GUI and that, but really, it's a server. Hmm. You know, so it doesn't need to look that pretty.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, what people have to understand is that Windows is designed for one thing and one thing only, and that's to make Microsoft a hell of a lot of money. Their whole business model is set out to do this. Now, that's not to say that Windows products do not do their job. They do, and they can do it very effectively. However, you still probably need to spend as much money employing somebody who knows their shit.
Oh, yeah.
On a Windows environment, as well as a Linux environment, and probably more so on a Linux environment, because obviously you don't have the benefit of a beautiful GUI for every single thing you're trying to do. In fact, you know, DNS has a GUI in Windows. Wins has a GUI. And everything has a fucking MMC. But these kind of things aren't so in Linux, and rightly so, they're not, because you really do not need a GUI to administrate a DNS server. You know, it's just there's no fucking need for it. You don't need these stupid drill down things and right click on this and text box for that. You can do it from a config file or from a text based environment. But I think it goes down to really educating these whoever's in charge of IT, really. You know.
Oh yeah, I certainly agree. Yeah, certainly I find that when it comes to this sort of thing, the GUI just gets in the way more than anything else. You know, if I just want to be setting my stuff up, I don't want to be dragging the mouse around and clicking and pointing and drawing fancy pictures on the screen. I want to be actually doing the configuration work. You know, I can get it done quicker with the keyboard, you know what I mean? But maybe that's just, well, it's not just me, clearly.
Yeah, I mean, in most cases, you don't even need a mouse, you know?
No.
It's like, you shouldn't really, in effect, need... rule of thumb, you should never physically have to do anything to a server. You should be able to do everything through SSH or a terminal.
Absolutely,
That's the way things are designed and how they should be. Windows doesn't work that way.
No, this is true. So, and it kind of defeats the thing of physical security.
Yeah.
I mean, really, your server should be locked away in a cupboard somewhere.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, someone might come in and walk off with it.
Mm.
Whereas if you've got your Windows set up, then you've got to keep on, as you say, playing with it at the console, which it's just not the way to be doing things.
I mean, obviously, you would at some point need physical access to the server. I'm not disputing that, but day-to-day stuff, you shouldn't have to use a keyboard and a mouse that's literally attached to a KMV box that's attached to the server. There's no need for it. And any operating system that requires that, aka Windows, is a bad operating system and should be punished severely.
Evil Windows.
But anyway, Planet, day to day, I know you do loads of stuff at once. How much of the kind of monkey work do you do, if I can call it that, as far as Windows administration goes?
I have to do so much monkey work, they painted my ass red. To be honest, not that much, really. We've got an active domain Windows 2000 kind of setup, mm-hmm. and that works wonders. It really does work well.
Yeah.
And this is in just a small business environment, only about 20 clients.
Yeah.
But so, like you were saying earlier, it does cost a lot.
Mm.
You could do that. You could do everything we need to do in a work group, and we used to do that with the help of a notebook.
Yeah.
which wrote down every single person's computer, IP address, what they needed access to, and stuff like that. But yeah. if that notebook gets pinched, oh dear, there goes all your security.
Yeah.
So we move to Active Domain Setup, which makes the administration so much more easier.
That's right.
It's absolutely great. But all of the stuff we do is Windows.
Yeah.
Don't use any Linux
service. Anything else. And another thing you find, actually, when you administrate a Windows network, which doesn't necessarily apply to Linux, is that you tend to use a hell of a lot of third-party apps to actually manage your shit. Even though Windows is actually fully equipped to do that stuff for you. Now, why do you need third-party apps to do something that the operating system already has? And this is, in my opinion, is that because the original apps that were designed to do those kind of things are very, very poorly designed and use up far too much processor resources because they're all fucking GUIs and they all do not work properly. So I'm talking about simple day-to-day network monitoring, backups, and all this kind of stuff is all built into Windows, not... Like, I don't know, 90% of people don't use it. They actually bring in third-party applications to do this for them. I don't know if anybody's kind of had that kind of same experience.
Not personally. As I say, we our network's not really that big, and we certainly don't have a Windows domain controller.
Yeah.
But just going back to the ongoing costs of running a Windows network, and what you were saying about the point of Windows being just to raise money for Microsoft, try getting support for an NT server nowadays.
You can't unless you go through, you know, a different support company.
Yeah, Microsoft won't support
you. Well,
because they don't sell it anymore.
Yeah, but they're still not losing money. Why? Because there's a critical link in this little chain. That's because anybody that, not necessarily, but if you needed support for a product that they no longer supported, and you needed to go through a different company, you'd expect that the person that you're asking support from is a Microsoft certified support engineer, or whatever you want to call, whatever the title you want to give him. And how can he do this? By going on a Microsoft authorized, paid for to Microsoft course. So they're still getting the money back to them.
True enough.
But this whole thing is it's a very corporate environment. You can't, it's nothing less and nothing more than a corporate led. And you'll find that many of these kind of people who I wouldn't call true geeks, even though they might be in a very geeky job, they are not true geeks because at the end of the day, they are very corporately minded. And, you know, fair play to them. They're probably making quite a lot of money from what they're doing. But in a sense, they don't understand how a computer works. And when you throw something, you know, sideways to them, they've got absolutely no fucking clue.
That's very true. They certainly make a lot of money. I know that much. Yeah. I've spent some time with a couple of these people, and they make a lot of money. But they're not, as you said, they're not hackers. They've gone, hackers in the you know, the true sense, not they go on the Microsoft certified engineer or whatever it is, as you say, and they know how to do some things that they've been told to do. But you say, I want to do this, and you ask them to do anything that's just like you say, not what they've been shown how to do, and the blue screen, they just not got a clue. They look at you like you're mad. I mean, I've shown some of these Microsoft certified people my Linux laptop, and just watch them standing around it looking like, you know, the monkeys at the start of 2001, just confused and angry. It's a sight to behold.
I think we've used that description twice now in Hacker Voice Radio.
All right.
once before Planet did it. Do you remember? He said, I think it was yesterday's episode.
It was just the other day.
maybe that's where I picked it up from.
Yeah, that's fucking great. Yeah, I love it.
It's such a cool image. It works on many levels.
Anyway,
so true.
Yeah. So, what else do we have? Do we have for news? Because we're actually running. Well, we've got about 15 minutes left of the show. Let's see. We've got ID cards. Impasses ended. What's this? Long-running row over government plans for identity cards looks to have ended after the House of Lords accepted a compromise deal under new plans. Anyone applying for a passport before January 2010 can opt out of having an ID card. The move follows months of wrangling between the Lords and the Commons on the issues, with peers rejecting compulsory by stealth by five MPs. MPs had earlier overturned the latest Lord's amendment, but Home Secretary Charles Clark, Charles Wank Clark, indicated that he was prepared to accept a workable compromise, which in PR talks means whatever I say goes. The bill will now return to the Commons for the compromise amendment to be confirmed. And Lucasaid just added there, what this story doesn't say is that although you won't be forced to have an ID card, when applying for a passport before 2010, your details will be added to the National ID Register. Of course, after 2010, the ID cards will be compulsory. So, either way, you're fucked.
Well, that's something for us to look forward to then, isn't it?
Yes.
Though we're not all technically prisoners, we're going to be treated like prisoners.
So, expecting a little rant there from Planet. I'm surprised you didn't burst out with a rage attack.
I haven't actually seen the story yet.
Oh. Well, that's basically it.
There's going to be one, trust me. I'll have to save it for tomorrow. Hmm. And look into some more of this.
Another thing I wanted to announce was there's a lot of interest right now in the forums about social engineering. My plan is, and this is my idea, and it's part of the Hack London project that I'm going to be trying to sell to people. Well, not literally sell, but anyway, what my idea is to create a UK hacker e-zine. And the first publication will feature the stuff that basically Hyper was talking about in the forums, about social engineering, sensitive information from people. And I want to add some stuff to that. I want to add a bit about how the hacking scene actually works on different levels. And obviously anyone else who's interested in actually contributing to this UK e-zine can do so. Now, the reason why I wanted it to be an e-zine rather than just a huge thread on the forum was because we, in the UK, we haven't had one in over like 5 to 8 years. I don't remember when the last one was brought out, but we really do need one. And I'd love to contribute to the old school e-zine, BBS, text file kind of thing. I think it would be great, and I think it would do wonders for the UK hacking scene to bring one out. And if anyone doesn't know what these kind of things are, just go to textfiles.com, and you'd get, or is it textfiles.org? Either one, try them out, and you find out what I'm talking about and how they actually look and how they actually what their purpose is. And I think the name kind of sums the whole thing up: e-zine, as in electronic magazine. A text file with a whole lot of stuff. So if anyone's interested in that, let me know and you know, say now, whenever.
Thank bloody idea. Just frack, for example.
Yeah.
Sadly gone away now, but That was quite the read in the old days.
Yeah.
2600, but that started off as an astronomic magazine, didn't it? Or was printed?
I think it was. I don't know if it originally started off in e-zine. I'd probably think it was originally some sort of e-zine and then developed into a fully featured magazine. But I'm sure it kind of evolved into that. But yeah.
Cool. Yeah, it's a good idea.
Yeah.
Certainly, there's something that I was thinking of myself, which this might be a suitable thing for it, which is to do with this bloody constant barrage of phishing emails which
right.
I seem to be getting.
Yeah.
And that my dad seems to be keep on getting, and it's got to stop.
Yeah.
So the idea I'm getting is working title is Operation Fishnet,
mm-hmm.
where the people that are running these phishing attacks are getting more and more sophisticated.
Will it involve fishnet stockings?
If you want to wear fishnet stockings,
yay!
I'll dress up. Be like,
I was thinking more about Planet wearing them.
Yeah, you would.
And me watching. Sorry, we wouldn't be Hacker Voice Radio without that kind of stuff. So. Yeah.
The mental image will stay with me.
Until death.
I have to sleep tonight as well. It's a shame. It's getting harder and harder to differentiate between the phishing mails and the real emails. You know, I recently bought Phishing Exposed. I've been reading through that, and really, it seems it's getting beyond the scope of the normal user. Yeah, I mean, the people that I work with, they do a lot of eBaying, mm-hmm. and what have you, and they're getting these phishing emails, and I can't really say to them, you know, you've got to start examining the headers of your email, because you know the girl that answers the phone doesn't understand the headers of her email, and if I tell her that she's got to examine the source of her email and analyse the URLs.
She thinks you're talking about ketchup.
Yeah, she just thinks I'm insane.
Yeah, no, I think that would be a great, great little thing to bung in there as well, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm thinking it's an ongoing project where we gather examples of these phishing attacks that come in, analyse them, submit them, as case studies, and in some cases even look at, I don't know, bringing some justice towards these.
I think that's fantastic. Because as you know, I've done quite a bit of work on that as well, so I'm sure I can contribute with a few ideas and some sources for that. Another thing I was thinking about doing was a little description on how Hotmail spam tends to follow you around the world and how it does this. What I mean about that is how spam specifically targets your physical location in which country you are. As in, if you were in the UK for 3 weeks, you would get English UK spam. If you went to Spain, you would get Spanish spam. If you went to, you know, New Zealand, you would get New Zealand-based spam and stuff like that. And just describe how this works, how they do it, and how Hotmail isn't doing anything to stop it.
That's very interesting. I've not heard of that. The way that it follows you around.
Well, trust me, it does. And I'd love to write something up for that as well. So obviously, people, if you are interested in this, don't let it slip by and just go, oh well, I'd like to do it, but can't be bothered to actually say something about it. And if you are interested, scream and shout and post in the forums and you know, make this stuff known, and Frohike was just saying, stop using Hotmail. Well, you know, I'm sure many people would love to do it, but, you know, all these people don't know. And also, he also clarified that 2600 was a magazine from day one. It wasn't an e-zine originally. So we're coming up to the end of the show right now. I think we can start kind of closing stuff off and play a bit of outro music. So cool. Yeah, thanks for joining us today, to all of you. Hope to catch you tomorrow, same time, same channel. And good night from me.
And me.
Just play a little bit more of our good friend Tom Baker.
Hey kids, Tom Baker here again. Do you like Hacker Voice Radio? Me too, especially that episode where they hacked the chameleon circuit on a Type 40 TARDIS. Oh, wait. That doesn't happen for another 12 years. Stay tuned, though. That's a spanker of an episode. You're listening to Hacker Voice Radio? I like it when they say fuck.
Sure that